Welcome to the Revital Health Podcast, where we explore the exciting intersection of modern science, ancestral wisdom, and personalized health optimization. I'm your host, Jodi DeVal, naturopath, integrative medicine expert, and founder of Revital Health Clinic in Perth, Western Australia. Each episode, we'll dive deep into cutting-edge therapies, groundbreaking research, and practical strategies to help you live your best life, having plenty of fun along the way. Whether you're keen to supercharge your energy, balance your hormones, or discover the latest biohacking trends, you've come to the right place. If you love what you hear, don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow so you never miss a moment with world-leading experts and game-changing insights. It's time to unlock your full health potential. Let's go!
Revital Health is a proud member of the Health Optimization Network. Health Optimization Medicine and Practice is a 501c3 nonprofit on a mission to educate doctors and practitioners on how to optimize for health rather than treating disease. If you're interested in becoming a practitioner or donating, head over to homehope.org. Revital Health Clinic is the first and only of its kind, exclusive health optimization clinic in Australia with state-of-the-art health technology protocols and personalized care, with compounded medicines made specifically for your testing individualities. To find out more, head to revitalhealth.com.au.
We acknowledge that the Revital Health Podcast is recorded on the unceded lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people of the Noongar Nation, Borloo. We recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture and pay our respects to Noongar elders past and present. Today, I'm joined by Matt Shales, CEO and co-founder of Medican Health, one of Australia's leading medicinal cannabis companies based here in Western Australia. Matt has been deeply involved in medicinal cannabis space since its legalization in Australia in 2016. What began as a personal curiosity about the therapeutic effects of cannabis plant evolved into a mission to help build a regulated, evidence-based medicinal cannabis industry. In this episode, we explore the science behind cannabinoids, terpenes, and the entourage effect, what actually defines a high-quality medicinal cannabis product, the importance of genetics, cultivation methods, and extraction processes, and the challenges of regulation, stigma, and education in Australia, and the future of cannabinoid medicine and emerging clinical trials. Matt also shares insights into groundbreaking research underway in areas such as endometriosis, chronic pain, concussion, dementia, and neurological conditions. This conversation is a fascinating look at how a once misunderstood plant is becoming one of the most exciting frontiers in modern medicine. We hope you enjoy. All right. Welcome to Revital Health Podcast. Matt Shales, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Lovely to be here.
Oh, gosh. I've been excited about this. You are so full bottle on cannabis and the plant itself, or the many variations of the plant. And I just can't wait to dive into it with you. So tell me what brought you to cannabis. How did you land in this amazing business that you've created?
Thank you. Well, a bit of a long story. I'll start from the very start, I guess. So I've always been very passionate about cannabis and the medical properties since I was around 17, 18. My first kind of consumption, I guess, I thought, like lots of young people, it might have been potentially a recreational vibe, but then continuing it on, I realised it's actually helping me get through the day. It's helping certain ailments in my life, etc. With that understanding, there could be a medical angle at that point in time. We're all kind of taught cannabis is bad and you need to try and have breaks if you can. But skip forward, you know, I kept on loving the plant, and my overactive mind would not let me just consume, and that's the end. I'd have to look into it. Why is this making me feel this way? Why is one strain or cultivar giving me one effect and another one is a completely different kind of effect? So I'd start to dig a bit deeper and learn more about cannabinoids and terpenes. And then I was, I guess, luckily enough, skip 10, 15 years later, it was legalized in 2016, and I could actually turn that passion into a reality. And I didn't realize that I was kind of gaining a bit of knowledge and IP along the way. It was just a passion of mine, and I was really intrigued by it, but I was actually gaining a lot of really valuable information that could help people later on through that process. So, a little bit of, I guess, self-education, and then 2016, when it was legalized, could formalize that and start looking at the proper channels through businesses and proper clinical trials and things like that. So yeah, it was a very exciting time back then. I first let other companies try, I guess. I wasn't my background not well, background before cannabis, I guess, was marine biology or commercial diving. So just loved the ocean and I guess working with my hands and physical labor. Not much on the business side of things or pharmaceuticals. And so I was pretty naive and kind of just thought, okay, I have no idea what to do here. It's great, it's legalized, I'll just be a patient. And then a few years went on and I started noticing not much is really happening yet. Lots of noise, but no medicines, not many people being helped. The companies that were trying were, I guess, trying their best, but not knowing what they were doing. And so it was extremely expensive, not accessible, and not really suitable products, we isolates and things like that. So started then thinking, all right, we've got to get involved here. So was trying to get some experience to put in a resume to get a job at another cannabis company. So started stalking someone called Luca Di Prato online, and he was doing his PhD on cannabis and hemp at the time. And it was actually just down the road from me. So I was like, this is meant to be. Contacted him, he ignored me for 6 months, and I just kept trying. Felt like a true stalker.
Persistence.
Yeah, but it was important to me. It was a real passion. And during this time, I was actually had lots of injuries with work. So I was, off work for about a year. And so I had lots of time on hands. And so I just kept bugging him. And finally, he said, yeah, come and help me measure the plants. And so I went and helped Luca. And that was a start to try and put something on a resume to try and get a job. But as we started, we realized, well, why don't we actually start the company ourselves? We kind of seemed that we thought we had a bit of knowledge between ourselves on the plant at least. And so that was 2018, 19, that all kind of happened. And yeah, that's how we kind of got into it. And then the hard work began.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess like biggest challenge so far for you, particularly just, in those initial stages, like what did you find was maybe the major thing that you found was the hardest?
So early on, it was all actually about getting things set up. Back then, there was actually no products really yet. It was, I call it the good old days. We had so much time, so much, there was no rush around. It wasn't, we could just slowly go around finding the right suppliers around the world. They weren't already in discussions with 20 other brands and all kind of trying to compete with each other about things outside of medicine. So it was quite enjoyable back then where I could just slowly, mainly it was Canada, were the only country slash companies in the world able to do it then. So finding the right partners, and then so I guess it was more about the licensing side, making sure everything was compliant and lined up. Back then, no one was really aware of what was required to bring it into Australia, the few different tests required and things like that. So got all that kind of sorted, then could get the first product into the country, and then it became issues around or hurdles around, I guess, education slash advertising. Obviously, we don't want to advertise and turn it into a Dentist Direct ad. If you've got a sore shoulder, you need some cannabis. But it's we also need to educate and actually get the word out there about it's not just smoking in the garage when you're a teenager or playing PlayStation or something like that. But my grandma, a definite example where she was so caught up in the stigma, she wouldn't even give it a look in. Finally, I convinced her to try it. It was a game changer. But that's a personal discussion. But how do we get that kind of going with the masses out there in the public? But fully understand we can't advertise, so it's a tricky one there of how we get the right word out. And for me, it's not a business. I'm here to help people. I'm here to create an industry. I'm here to help educate. And so for me, it's not around trying to do I don't know, a gimmick of what can we educate to try and sell our product more. It's actually a bigger picture. Let's just educate on cannabis. What is full spectrum versus broad spectrum, or what is a sativa versus indica, or what are the different delivery mechanisms, and understanding that it's not all the same. So people tell me, oh, I've tried cannabis when I was 18. It's not for me. And I'm like, well, that's a very broad statement. It's like saying you've sculled a bottle of Bacardi 151 and you don't think alcohol is for you when you could have a wine or a beer or a 0% beer, like a CBD product or something. So it's we really need to educate, but caught up with the advertising kind of hurdle as well. But yeah, it's I don't want to sound like I complain too much as we go on in this chat. It might sound like I've got a negative vibe on the issue, but I always have to bring it back and remember that we're super lucky that the TGA's even allowed us to do this to start with. Because any other medicine, or before it's a medicine, they make us do clinical trials, prove it's safe, tens of millions of dollars, and 10 years later, we can finally prescribe it. So we're pretty lucky that the TGA have said, you know what, guys, you can actually prescribe this. There's a different system, the special access scheme or the authorized prescriber scheme, but it's still an option. So while sometimes it might feel like we're feeling like it's not the perfect system, I'm actually just grateful we have a system. We're the second or third country in the world to even legalize it. It's pretty, Australia seems like we're behind a bit or strict, but well, we're kind of leading the way medicinally with cannabis. So yeah, I think we've got to make sure we keep positive about it as well. But yeah, there's that education advertisement side that's tricky to navigate. It's hard seeing someone like my grandma or someone go to some other a clinic and be prescribed something that's not appropriate for them. It could have just been a CBD topical product, but they're given a vape cartridge to inhale, things like that. It's which is fine for some people, but not really my grandma. So it's hard to kind of get the word out there. But I guess that doctor, they might have many patients that the patients are wanting flower or a vape cart, and they're thinking that's just what is wanted.
Needed,
Yeah, and so really hard to now realize there's so many different patient types. We've got 2-month-old babies with seizures, my grandma, and then patients like myself, where it is a little bit more casual is not the right word, but it's not life-threatening. It's I know what I'm doing. I can chat with the doctor and figure it out. But my grandma would need to just be told everything exactly like a normal medicine. Have this much this time of the day. This is how you have it. And we're finding
Especially
some.
around the safety of the stigma as well, like you say, like if already there's a stigma and then the medicine's just not professionally handled or dealt out and then given the right information around, then it's going to be even harder for people to understand and to take it seriously. And I think that's a big part. And as you're saying, like the biggest challenge I feel as well in this industry is that, firstly the stigma and overcoming that, which we're getting there. There's more education, there's more information, there's more people recommending it and referring it. But it's that education piece where, practitioners, even like myself, having the knowledge on it, and more of practitioners like myself, which is happening. I see more education coming out for all different styles of nutritionists, naturopaths, doctors, and so there's more of an awareness to be like, well, go and see this person, and they're going to help you, and so then they can, pick up the requirement, the need for the medicine, and then go take it to, the prescriber, so they can do it properly. I was talking with the other day, Len May. So Len May is a guy from America. He created EndoDNA. So they do like DNA genetic support testing to work out the ratios and everything like that. And I've known Len for many years. So he's a good guy. And we're talking about the legalities and the differences between America and Australia, which obviously I'm a part of both. And he was saying, "Oh, I wish it was better regulated here, in America, because it's really hard to know what you get from a product because it is not regulated." And I'm like, "Yes, that's what I love about Australia." Although I'm, second to what you said before, it's frustrating still. Australia, in some areas, is a little bit slower, but for a good reason. And I actually, I'm with you, and I'm really, appreciative of the fact that we have this medicine here and that it's actually really tightly controlled, because then we can know what's in it and we can know who's producing it, how it's produced. And there is that safety parameter around, if I want to know that I prescribe a certain ratio of a certain or a type of plant, I know exactly that's what I'm giving referring my clients for. So it's like you say, it's frustrating on one angle because you have to comply, but then there's the other side where we have guaranteed safety and progression, and that progression is really, really important in this industry to maintain it and to have it still in 10 years.
Exactly right. And that's the thing, we've got to make sure as well we're doing it in a way that's helping change that stigma. If you've got someone coming in trying this medicine, generally it's the last resort. People have tried all these other things first and they've gone, okay, I'm maybe not a believer in cannabis. Everyone that's a believer is already kind of on cannabis now. It's been around long enough. And now it's really converting people that are a bit wary, but they'll give it a try. And if their first few experiences are negative, and they have the wrong product or too much, or even potentially a quality issue where, say, it's a pastille slash gummy and it's melted into one big blob. It's not really the greatest look. I mean, some people say, that's fine, just bite a bit off. And it's like, well, hang on. It's
Dosing.
no, hang on. When we're talking to the GP in the corner and it's the patient's first experience, etc., that's not what we're wanting here. That's adult use when we get there eventually, and recreational, that angle is a bit fine then. But we've got to remember it's just, people are treating it as a very serious medicine right now, and a melted medicine is not a great look. And so yeah, it's really tricky where we've right now the industry or the patient base is well, a bit of everything. You've got patients that are treating it like a very serious medicine. You've got some people wanting to do it the right way instead of going to their neighbor or grow it themselves. They want to go through the doctor, do it the right way, but also They are just a bit more casual in their consumption. So that, yeah, it's finding that right, that balance. But we at Medican, for me, it's let's treat it like the estate medicine it is. If and when it ever turns recreational, we'll have our spot in that industry there, and we'll do what we do. But right now, it's I'm thinking of the 2-month-old baby. Well, she's not 2 months old anymore. She'd be about 5 years and 2 months. But when she first came to us, she was 2 months. 50 seizures a day. And this is the person I think of when we make all of our products through Medican or our decisions through the clinic side of things. It's always that kind of patient in mind, because we can't really control who we're helping. You know, someone might develop a medicine or a brand or a clinic for a certain group of patients, but you can't actually control who's going to book in or be prescribed your product. So I make sure we've got, yeah, it's suitable for everyone.
Options.
And then we can help change that stigma, show it's a serious medicine. The clinical trials are a big part for us for that long term. It's great we can be prescribing it right now, but the long term clinical trials I feel are needed where we can actually prove it with data. We can help convert the non-believers with some science and show them that it can be safe and effective as well. You know, so gosh, I'll use the right wording. I was going to say wasted. We haven't wasted $20 million. We've invested $20 million in clinical trials.
Invested.
Don't think we care about it just yet, but again, I'm thinking 10 years time when we can actually talk about it, hopefully being subsidized by the government and more affordable, but we need all this data to help get there. So we'll do the hard battle on that one, and everyone else can continue just buying and selling. But I think trials are a big thing. And we can discover so much more. We're only really touching the surface where, yes, CBD or THC formulas are helping a lot of different areas or may help a lot of different areas, but I'd like it to get it to its specific formulas for specific uses. You know, we've got this one that's most effective for autism, or this one that's most effective for the tremor of Parkinson's or motor neuron disease, et cetera. Really help bring the cost down, improve efficacy, you know, decrease the dose they have to have. So if there's any potential side effects, it can decrease those. That's our kind of long-term plan. But the best bit is many of these products, just version one, having some great effects. And so, you know, it could be easy to give up, well, not give up, but stop there saying, well, it's working, let's go. But I strive for perfection and just want to keep getting better and better and all that. And different delivery mechanisms. Right now, we've got common products, you know, flower or vape cartridge for inhalation, which is rapid onset, works quite quickly and doesn't last as long in the body. Then you've got your ingested products, oils, capsules, gummies, things like that, where it takes a bit longer to take effect but lasts longer in the body. Topicals, we've got a vaginal cream for endometriosis now, all different types with patches as well. So I look forward to seeing in 10 years' time where we could actually get a lot of other, you know, advanced medical devices incorporating cannabis and seeing what we can kind of develop there. And then also mix cannabinoids with other proof medicines and compounds as well and see what we can do. So, yeah, we're really just touching the surface, but it's already having such a positive effect on many people.
Absolutely. I second all of that, and it is really exciting. You know, like you say, just scratching the surface there, and there's so much more to be discovering, and the trials are really important. And I want to get to that in a minute. But rounding off the products, you know, you said so well across all different styles that we have in terms of delivery methods. But what of the actual product, you know, and I know this is a big passion of yours. I wanted to sort of outline a little bit more around what defines a truly high quality medicinal cannabis product. And so, because I don't think there's enough said around the way it's grown, the what's gone into it, the types of product, you know, all of that detail. Maybe give us a little bit more information on that.
Yeah, and so it's super tricky as well when people will be asking for advice, you know, what, which is on online forums and whatnot, and people helping each other. Oh, what do I need for this? And a lot of people have the right starting point. Oh, you need a full spectrum. But then it's kind of like, well, you've started. It's like saying you need a sandwich. Well, what do we need in that sandwich? And so I guess I'll talk about some of the terminology, which also is tricky because they're not scientific terms. Well, it's up for interpretation, really. Some people might use a term and it means something different to them, but I'll cover a few of those and what we believe they mean. And so when we're making different products, well, the first starting point is the genetics used. So what strain of cannabis are we using? You know, for example, these are actually both Monsteras. We've got a Thai Constellation and then your fruit salad. So it's kind of like different strains of a Monstera. That's not why I put them there, by the way, but just
Yeah,
looked at
it's a
it,
good
sort of an
example,
example.
yeah.
There's all different strains of cannabis. And so You've got some that are high THC, low THC, high CBD, low CBD. There's actually hundreds of different cannabinoids, CBC, CBG, CBN, and the list is endless. Then terpenes, which are aromatic compounds, smells in plants, linalool in lavender, pinene in pine trees, myrcene in mangoes. These all have different effects. And it's what creates kind of sedation or energizing effects, or the different outcomes that cannabis can provide. And so there's different strains we grow is the starting point about what cannabinoids and terpenes and flavonoids, et cetera, might actually be present. So that's the starting point. Then from there, it's about, okay, how you've grown it. Is it outdoor in living soil? Is it indoors where it's a bit more controlled? Is it in rock wool? Is it in coco peat? So all these different growing mediums play a role as well. There's no, well, there, there's, well, there's no bad way to do it. Every way we're doing it for the medicinal world is fine. There's just different layer, qualities, I guess, layers, and then also, I guess, what the end outcome we want is it for a flower product, for an extraction product? You could do an outdoor product out there in the field if it's for extraction. A little bit trickier if it's for flower because bugs and birds poo on it, and so you got to think about those kind of things where, okay, we've got to probably put that through a wash and clean it up and use it for extraction. Indoor controlled stuff a bit better for flower or in polytunnels. So the first point is the genetics we use, and then the growing methods. And then what we're doing from there. So you've grown the flower, for example. Let's say we're going to make an oil or a gummy or a vape cart with it. We need to then extract the cannabinoids and terpenes from the flower, and they're held within the trichome of the plant. So you've got your female cannabis or hemp plant. It produces a flower. All the glistening trichomes, or your little glistening resin glands on there, that's what holds all your compounds. And so it's pretty much removing those from the plant with a solvent like ethanol, CO2, something like that. And then you go and evaporate that from the extract, and you've got your pure cannabis extract that you can make a product with. So you might dilute it into a carrier oil like hemp seed oil, and then you've got your typical oil product, or mix it into a gummy format, and you've got your gummies, etc. So again, it just kind of depends what you're needing. Is it a ingested product? Is it an inhaled product? And then how you go about making that. In terms of the extraction processes, it's not new, but newly into the medicinal market, where it's called live rosin or live resin. And that's actually where you've got your fresh plant, harvested it, fresh frozen it, so it hasn't dried at all, kept all your terpenes, cannabinoids as best they could be. Done a bubble hash process where you're pretty much shaking it in bubble water to snap off those trichomes. And then live rosin, ROSIN, is when you just squish it with heat and pressure, and then you squish out the cannabinoids and terpenes. So no solvents used at all, completely solventless. So that would be your most premium, cleanest, purest way to extract. But again, it depends what your end product is, and what you're needing from that. So the most important bit is, though, it's the genetics used. If I grew a strain that had not much in there in the way of cannabinoids and terpenes, it doesn't matter what we do after that. That's what our initial kind of working material is. So genetic selection of what we want it for. If we want something that's energizing, we need something with certain terpenes like terpinolene, pinene, limonene that can be quite uplifting. If you want something that's more sedating, well, then it's all about the strain we choose to grow. It should have things like linalool, which is in lavender and can be calming, myrcene in mangoes, those kind of things. So that's the most important bit. And then from there, it's about how we go and make that product. The other area post-harvest for flower is the drying and curing process. So some people are, I guess, rushing the drying process, or drying it too much to go, well, we don't want any mold, which is fair enough. They'll just dry it to the nth degree, not realizing, well, then we're losing terpenes. We want to retain as much of the good stuff as well. So it's that fine balance of cannabis people working in these manufacturing plants, but also compliance-wise, where they know that right balance of having a product that has a good shelf life and going to be safe for a year to come, but also they're not foregoing quality. So some people will just go, yeah, we've got a great system. It dries the product really quickly and it saves us all this time. And I'm going, that sounds amazing for you and the cost. What about the end quality of the product? Have you looked at that at all? And some are like, oh, hang on, no. And so they just think it's all about THC. And I said, no, there's everything else we need to look at as well. So it depends who you chat to. Some that it's just, no, we just need THC. That's all we care about. Some it's, we want to retain terpenes. And so there's a lot that can come into it after growing the plant as well. But that's where it's a bit trickier when someone grows in their living room in one tent one plant and they grow it here, dry it here, and consume it here. It's a bit easier to retain quality than growing it around the world and having to send it to different places to get treated, packaged, and then sent to the pharmacy. Then AusPost sends it to your house in a 40-degree truck. It's so many, it's absolute nightmare for us that are perfectionists. And I'm like, oh,
So
look at
many
all this hard
variables.
work, and the very last bit is a 40-degree day could ruin it all. But and so we've got to also realize supply chain, it's a different story than someone just growing at home. It's as buildings the size of, that building out there, and yeah, bigger scale. But yeah, it's, for us, it's finding that right balance between the two, retain quality, and yeah, it's a hard battle, but we're here for the fight.
It may be a silly question, but it fascinates me none the same. Right at the beginning with the genetics, how do you have like a booklet, a seed bank? You look at it and you go, okay, I'm going to select this one, especially for your purpose of looking for specific strains for your perfectionist, quality of providing a really good product and then knowing what it's going to be for and used for and the treatments. What does that process look like? That fascinates me.
Yeah, it's exciting and then also hard where it's so it's other industries you've got stabilized genetics, Granny Smith apples,
That's it.
those kind of things where every time you grow that seed, it is that. With cannabis, where it's such a new legal industry where these genetics haven't actually been stabilized, where well, not many, where so I might breed this Monstera with that Monstera, and then whatever kind of seed it produces, well, let's say we get 100 seeds, they're all going to be slightly different. It might have taken more from its mum than it did its dad, etc. So what you need to do normally with agricultural industries is you'd stabilize that genetic. You keep breeding them, you'd breed it back with its parents to get the certain traits you want, whether it's the size of the plant. So a combine harvester can go and harvest the crop all with the one kind of machinery, etc. Or it's certain terpenes that we want, or a size of a seed, whatever it is we're kind of wanting out of it, we want to try and breed that into it. And so, again, it takes a lot of time and effort. And so, not many people have done that because why would they when no one's asking for it? But until now, it hasn't been needed because it's all just been, underground or the recreational angle where it doesn't matter if it's not consistent. So now it's actually, we've got to look at stabilizing these genetics as well. So, I might look at a seed bank. I go, wow, this one sounds amazing, but that's probably not what I'm going to actually receive. I might get something close to it, but we need to do a pheno hunt where you plant hundreds of seeds or more, and then you go and let them all grow up, and then you actually find the ones that have the traits you want, and then go and get those and breed those further. But so that's the long kind of angle of it, or the long game, but is exciting where you can look at genetics people are aware of over the years, and they've got certain traits to them. Yeah, right now we're actually talking to a few local growers that have just got their license and have the whole genetic bank we can actually start to pick and choose from as well. And I'm all about the original ones from back in the day that everyone knows the names of, not these ones with God, all these different mixes, this cross, this cross, this cross, this that don't know what it is. But I'm a bit of a purist. But so yeah, it's a really exciting time, and you look for just I guess patterns. Okay, this is generally dominant in these terpenes, which may have this effect, but we don't actually know until we've grown it, done a bit of R&D, and then really tested it. But that's how it starts, yeah, with the seed bank and going from there. And then
Fascinating.
I guess, well, yeah, from there as well, it's a bit tricky because there's so many variables to these plants. It's not just one or two things that remain consistent. We're trying to, yeah, it's a living being, a living thing. And so very hard to actually control. But trying to turn it into a
Absolutely.
medicine with active ingredients and those remaining consistent, we've got to find some way to control it. A bit easier with your extracts, oils, and things, because we can get in the middle of that and put more or less of it in there to get to the certain level we need. But a flower is a flower. We can't
That's
change
it.
it. But yeah, so it's all around the genetic banks to start with, and then doing a bit of breeding yourself by mixing different genetics and combining what you're looking for.
Fascinating. I have not had this discussion yet, Matt, so I thank you so much because I didn't know I needed these answers before. It just blows my mind how complex all of this is, and obviously not familiar with that base end of the industry. It's really important that we are, that the work that goes into that, and to know, like
Exactly
you
that.
say, You can do all the profiling afterwards for the different cannabinoids and the different terpenes, but you won't know that until you've grown it, and that's a big process just to get to that point.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm just gonna wait
And
till it's fully matured and four
then
months
test
later.
it.
But yeah. And one other thing on that, some bits where it can be well, not there's not, it's not misinformation. It's just yeah, everyone's got their own thoughts on things. But hemp versus cannabis, and so there's a lot of misinformation around that where people
Yes.
think they're different plants completely, but it's not. Hemp and cannabis is the exact same plant. It's Cannabis sativa L, the species. It's just about what we call it depending where we live, really. So in Australia, it's hemp is cannabis that has THC less than 1%. If I have a cannabis strain that's got 0.9% THC, it's hemp. Now, if I grew that in America, where that limit is 0.3, then that they call it cannabis now. And so it's the same plant. It's not like it's a different, yeah. But people will think, no, it looks different. I've seen it, pictures of it. It's tall and thin like bamboo. And so this shirt is made of hemp. If we were growing hemp to make clothing with, we want long fibers. So you want to plant the plant really close together so they compete for light and just grow a tall, long stem so we can get a long fiber to make clothing. If you're wanting to actually produce seeds, you want the female to flower and you want kind of a bit more of a bushy plant, I guess. So you'd plant them further apart. Or if you don't want any seeds and you want it to be cannabis, you'd have no males and just let the female just flower. So the exact same plant, so there might be products out there where it has the word hemp in it, and people get a bit confused. Oh, I want hemp, I need cannabis. But the other kind of layer of confusion come in was hemp seed oil and CBD oil. So when that all kind of come around, people were using the word, I guess, hemp oil to call it CBD, and or when they were really meaning hemp seed oil. So there's a bit of confusion around that, where some people have gone, oh no, you don't want hemp seed oil, or you don't want hemp oil. That's a scam. But when you're talking CBD oil from hemp, you know, it's nothing to do with that. And so I guess hemp seed oil is from the seed of the plant, and CBD oil is from the flower. But yeah, hemp and cannabis, the same plant, just depends what we're using it for and how we grow it. It may look a bit different, you know.
Yeah, wow. Love this. Oh, my brain is exploding. This is so good. So good. Thank you, Matt. You are just a full bottle of knowledge. I don't know where you store all this.
Neither do
I want to now talk about the trials. So some research. We briefly spoke about it, when we met a week ago. And I really wanted to make sure that we got a chance to go through all the exciting things that have been done or in the pipeline. Or also, I know you have, as you've already alluded to, some really key areas of studies that you'd love to start to look at. And for obviously, as many people that can help in that is obviously a benefit. So the purpose of also doing this and chatting about it. So yeah, talk me through what that sort of discovery process at the moment.
Yeah, so we've ourselves, Medicann Health, and then partnered with Ananda, another company that we're partnered with within Australia. They are big on clinical trials, so they're the ones that spent 20 million, not myself. We've spent around about 1 million. Their trial area is super unique. They've got endometriosis, so we've got a vaginal cream, which is literally, we won't say the C word yet, curing, but in the organoid trials, is getting rid of lesions within 1 month. And
And I can
so,
second this. I use it in so many of my clients, or I have them prescribed to so many of my clients, and they're absolutely incredible.
yeah, well, yeah, it's one of those things where generally with cannabis, it's definitely not about curing something. It's just helping with symptom control. So let's say if it's Parkinson's disease, we're not curing Parkinson's. It's helping potentially with a tremor, pain, things like that. But with the results in this trial so far, it's getting rid of the lesions. So it's very exciting. Potentially, you know, no need for surgeries. As we continue this trial, we'll be able to see more.
Oof.
But yeah, on an organoid model, very exciting so far. So that one's being done at Sydney Uni over in New South Wales.
Yep.
We've also done a pain trial in 2019, which was looking at improved quality of life and reducing use of opiates. That one within 8 weeks, just a broad spectrum product, so THC free. That and real world dosing, when we do trials, it's real world dosing, 15, 30 milligram dosing. None of these ones where it's 3,000 milligrams, where no one can actually afford that
Get
or
to
access
that.
that anyway. So we want to try and find a formula that's actually effective. And so, yeah, 15, 30 milligram doses, these format trials have been done on, and so we're getting really positive results. The pain one, 58% reduced opiates within 8 weeks, and 98% had improved quality of life within 8 weeks. We've done a concussion clinical trial here at Perrin Institute and Murdoch University, Curtin University, sorry. And that was amazing. It was a world first. It was not animal models because we couldn't cut open the brain of a human. Would hurt them doing that. So it was on animal models, but it was really exciting to see that the four different formulas we tested actually brought the brain, when we talked about neuroinflammation or activated microglia in the cortex, it was in a better state after being concussed and given our medicine than the brain that was never concussed. And so, again, this is on animal
Whoa.
models. More studies need to be done, but very exciting initial kind of phases and steps here. But we were the only company in the world to actually test on a certain gender. It'd only been either males or females at that point. And so, there's just such little research in the world on concussion in general that we've already kind of got a potential solution there to help. So, yeah, they're the main areas. So, endometriosis, actually, whilst doing that, they've discovered some gynecological cancers and things like that as well, it's helping with. So, again, the continuing new trials there, but it's a really exciting there. Endo, also dementia. So trials on dementia, quality of life, and also quality of life of the caregivers. You know, we're finding if we can be helping the patients and with some symptom control, it also helps those around them as well. So
How
really exciting
important.
areas there. Some of these are, you know, your gold standard phase one, two, three for product registration, trying to make it a mainstream medicine that anyone can prescribe, hopefully try and get it around the world. And some, it's also about getting some initial data to, you know, try and get ethics approval to continue on to humans, things like that. But it's all very important. It needs to be done. It's not just on those areas too. For example, the scans we got of the brain for concussion, we can also use that for dementia, motor neuron, Parkinson's, other areas that have kind of similar things going on in the brain. So yeah, I look forward to kind of having the right people around us that can take this further as well. I find at Medican where the Australia's best kept secret in a way. I find some people are really good at getting the word out there when there's not much going on, and we've got some great things happening, but not many people know about it. It just sits in our emails. You know, those results for concussion we had in 2022. It's 4 years ago.
Gosh, we need to get this out into the world, man. This is
I
crazy.
know. But then that's the bit. I've been told off for being on the news. The TGA told me off when I was on the news and about this trial. And I didn't talk about any brand names because it wasn't a brand, it was a formula that got tested. But I'd hate to go and get told off as well. I'm really scared of that side of it. So I never like to work in gray areas. But yeah, we've got to the right way get the word out to the people and make sure the right. There might be other scientists out there that want to be involved and take it further. I know there's lots of people in AFL and different sports that are having to retire because of this. And so even if we could be helping in the patient side there, but yeah, no, it's very exciting space. The endo one is huge as well. There's nowhere near enough being done in that space, and I'm kind of excited that not only we can help with symptoms like the pain and discomfort, but actually getting rid of lesions is a very exciting potential outcome. So yeah, we'll continue those and announce more when we can.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's just so much around endometriosis at the moment, and so much unknown, and then just so little treatment or even symptom relief available for it. And this is why I found it so ex it, I was so excited when I actually trialed it with the first couple of my patients that I convinced, because again, it was that stigma. Like, why would I put cream up there? And what's that going to do for me? And it's just CBD. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, can you just give it a try?
And many people have always said that, oh, it's just, I've tried CBD online before, it was useless. And they may have, it may have been isolate, which is not the greatest. So with an isolate, you've just removed the CBD on its own and you're just having that. So you're lacking all the other terpenes and cannabinoids that I mentioned. It's called the entourage effect. They all work together to create a better outcome. And or it might have also been a full spectrum product, but it just wasn't the one for them. They might have been needing CBD to help with sleep, and they're having one that's actually giving them energy or something like that. So, but they bought it offline. They just assume that's what it all is, and they say, "Nah, CBD is useless." And it's real tricky because CBD just may work behind the scenes. You know, you don't notice it as much. Some things you definitely can, but some it's quietly doing things behind the scenes, and when you stop it, that's when you notice it most and go, "Oh wow, hang on a minute! All these niggles have come back all of a sudden. I'm not feeling as great again." But yeah, it's hard. THC, if people find it, they notice the feeling of it more because it's happening there and then. But yeah, so it's a tricky one. But yeah, that comment's always said, "Oh, it's just CBD. What could it do?" It's like, no, come
Oh no,
on.
I get up in arms and I start explaining the physiology and what's happening and what CBD does and then the cannabinoid system, and
What
then they're
can't
just like,
it
I'm sorry I
do?
asked.
Yeah. That's, and it's
But
tricky in the doctor consults too. There is limited time, and so there's when they need
yes.
to also talk about the history and the different medicines the patients are on and going through root cause. It's hard to then also do so much education and training on the cannabis side of things. And so we're at our clinic, we're trying to figure out ways as well where we can let the doctors just cover the bits they really need to and they're the professionals at, and then we can have other people as well help in other areas that it's not the best use of the doctor's time. If they're just talking about, I don't know, how it was grown or something, we can have other people chat about those things too, unless it's an hour-long consult, but it becomes a little expensive and things like that. So it's trying to find that
Absolutely.
is a hard one, because cannabis definitely needs to be in the medicinal space as well. But there's also a lot of patients where it could probably be in that supplement area, you know, like it's still regulated and still people involved, but it doesn't actually probably need to be, you know, with a specialist or things or you know, GP and things like that. But the system we've got right now, I like that we've got that as a starting point, and then we can see how it evolves. And I think the government might end up realizing potentially that there's all this non-compliance potentially going on, but no issues. No one's dying. That's the best thing about cannabis. You can't, well, I won't say you can't, there hasn't been a lethal overdose yet with cannabis in the history of the world, because there's no cannabinoid receptors in the part of the brain that control breathing. And so you can't stop your breathing. You've got opioid receptors there. So if you have too many opioids, you stop breathing. It's as simple as that. It doesn't happen with cannabis. You can definitely have too much and not feel well. You can have an overdose and not feel the greatest, but you can do that with everything. You can do it with water. And so the best thing with cannabis, I find many prescribers that get involved, they realize it's compared to other medicines, it's quite a safe medicine in their pharmacopoeia. It's lack of side effects. The side effects may be a dry mouth or red eyes or something minimal like that. It's not organ failure, it's not death. And people have had accidentally 10 times the dose and told us about it, and we say it's fine. It's not fine, but okay, remember it's 0.1, not 1 mil. If that was Panadol or another medicine, it's serious trouble
They'd be in
and or death.
hospital.
And so, whilst I'm not meaning to say there's no risk with cannabis, it's not what I'm saying at all. There's both sides with everything, and it still definitely has to be done properly. It's just a case that when doctors are kind of getting involved with cannabis, there's that stigma there. Then once they start, they realize, oh wow, gosh, is this all? I deal with many more medicines that are extremely dangerous, and if they have too much, they're going to hospital, or if it's not the right one for them, they're really having a difficult week or month. And things like that. So yes, it's an interesting one. My brother is a surgeon, and I'll never forget the other year he was kind of keep trying to convince him to look into cannabis. He just wants evidence it's safe. He wants another 20 years of data. I said, we've got 1,000 years of data, but we've actually got evidence to say the other medicines you prescribe are not safe. And so I don't understand that concept of I need not safe, because even if we did the trials and we come back saying if you have too much you die, like other medicines, that hasn't stopped
You still
them.
prescribe that.
Yeah, so I'm like, oh, really tricky. But I do understand it's you know, a doctor or prescriber is not going to just want to risk their license. They work very hard to get where they are, and so I definitely understand it. It's just sometimes, you know, what I know, what they're saying just doesn't make sense. But we've got to take time to explain it and educate. And the fact that they're open and willing to look into it, it's great. It's a great start. But when I try and put that theory back on what they're already doing, it starts to not make sense pretty quickly.
No, absolutely. I totally agree. And I think it's a frustrating place. And because it has been with this stigma, it has been hard stop and then it's come back in slowly again. And that's where is that real reteaching aspect and the trials as you're talking about and all the exciting things that are coming up are going to really just show that at a deeper level. And even like Len that I was speaking with, the creating more of this information around how you can match even genetics. So if they're still really at a loss to go, oh, is this safe or is it not? Well, this is exactly what your patient needs based on their genetics. And this is going to be how you can safely apply it to them, even if it was already safe in the beginning.
And something like that is would be amazing and needed. I've looked into it in the past to try and get something developed there, because again, there's so many moving parts to this plant and us as people that it's really hard to find patterns. I'd like to have it where you would go, all right, this group of patients that do or don't like these kind of products, we also find do or don't like these other ones, and so it will get this certain of effect. But I'll feel like I'm on a pattern, you know, with say Parkinson's patients, realizing, all right, this is the kind of formula they need, and then all of a sudden another patient comes in and it's the opposite. It's like, ah, oh, gosh, So we really freaked about to have some kind of DNA mapping where we can be actually matching it a bit better like that, because for the medicinal side at least, it's the issue is it's you get your medicine. It can be expensive to have a consult depending the patient's scenarios, and you might get prescribed a medicine that's meant to last you, or that script's meant to last you 6 months. You go at home, you try the product, it's the opposite of what you need. Not just a case of I don't like the flavor, but it's giving me energy when it's meant to be for my insomnia. Then many just go, okay, I'll go book in again. But it's like, well, hang on, okay, it's not as easy as just booking in again, paying all this money, and some it can be, but many it's not. Definitely if you're on a disability pension, things like that. So it's that tricky one as well, where we'd like to have it perfected, where we almost can guarantee we're going to get the right result or a close enough outcome without expecting them to have such a trial and error period. But it is like that at the moment. There's so many variables we don't actually really know. We can try our best, but it's always, people with different outcomes. But yeah, so the data, the DNA side would be a great thing to, if that can kind of get going. And with the safety side, when I talk about it, there's definitely unsafe sides to it. It's not the product itself, but it's when you've got someone that's very ill relying on the medicine, well, then that medicine not being consistent is unsafe. And so, yeah, and that's the bit about recreational versus medicinal, I guess, that the safety of the product is fine. Yes, people will say, oh, what about heavy metals or pesticides or whatever in the recreational stuff? But put it this way, it's been happening for many, many, many centuries and nothing's popped up yet, right? So if something was going to happen, it would have happened. And so my theory is, as we're consuming the product, it's healing anything of the bad bits that were in it anyway.
It's got so many good medicinal parts to it.
But if it was that, risky of, oh no, if you grow in your own backyard, it's going to be bad. Like, we would know by now. And so it's more about the consistency of supply. If you're using it for seizures, you need it to be the same every time. Not just the THC level. Everything that was in there was making it the seizures stop. And if you go and change that, it may not work the next time. And so all of a sudden, you're having seizures for a week while you get your next medicine. That is not safe at all. And so that's the angle where I talk about this. Cannabis medicines need to be safe or reliable. When we talked about the different product types. And the safety side of it all, I guess, it's and some aren't doing it as being dodgy or intentionally. They just don't understand the plant enough to realize there's more to it than THC CBD. But it might be a case of okay, you've got a supplier for this CBD product or THC product. Great. Oh, they've now got issues or they've run out or whatever. But we don't want to sell out, so we'll go and find another product that's the same strength of CBD. And they think it's the same product, but it doesn't work like that. We're knowing more and more now. It's the whole profile. But that company might just think, no, we can't sell out. We need to keep these people their medicine. So we'll just get that one that's been offered to us, but not understanding, no, that's not going to be great for the patient. It's going to maybe not work anymore. And this at the other, some are doing it knowing that, and some aren't understanding the plant enough to realize. So it's not always a dodgy kind of act. For me, I understand far too much that it keeps me up at night knowing that we have to keep this all consistent, and I don't want to take any shortcut plan B things like it's no, I need to find this exact same thing again if there's an issue with it. Or if we're changing something, every patient needs to know. We can't just call it the same medicine and the same strength if it's a different strain. And so it's a bit tricky there. It's not illegal to do what other people are doing, because the way the government, actually it's worth knowing, the way the government view it is THC over 1% is an active pharmaceutical ingredient, API, or any other cannabinoid over 2%. Now, 2% CBC, 2% CBG is a good amount. They normally in trace amounts. And so it doesn't really, well, if you've got 1.9% CBC, it's not an active ingredient. It doesn't need to be on the label claim. And so it doesn't need to be consistent. It could be there today and next week it's not there. It doesn't matter. It's just a constituent, a terpene or a carrier oil kind of thing. And so, and same deal with terpenes. They don't consider those active ingredients, but you could completely change them and announce a sleeping medicine, not a daytime medicine, but it's the same medicine in the government's eyes, and you don't have to say anything different. So it's a bit tricky there as well, where for myself that knows all
Reporting
this
standards.
extra stuff, but it's like, oh, hang on, guys, we've got to keep it consistent. But so it's tricky there about quality of a product being the same each time, not just how we've made it, but however we've done it, keeping it the same. And then also little things like some people may turn it into a bit of a business where you go, all right, we want a full spectrum product, not an isolate where you've got just one cannabinoid, but you've got them all working together. They might actually just get a 2 milligrams of full spectrum and then get a heap of isolate to bring it up to a really high level. And so someone reads 100 milligram per mil full spectrum CBD product. Oh, great, but if you knew behind the scenes, you'd realize that brand actually might be really isolate. Nothing wrong with it. It's more about just the patient and/or doctor knowing the full story so they know what they're actually prescribing. And if it didn't work, they realize it's actually probably because it's mainly isolate and they can still try another full spectrum CBD and it might have a better result. But yeah, it's tricky where there's everyone's got their different needs to be in this industry. For me, it's improving quality of life. It's not profits. It's not let's get the biggest, let's be the biggest. It's let's help people because I know about the plant, you know. And so it's slower growth and harder work, but I want to actually do that genuine work where it's you're creating an industry and people can get genuine knowledge and info and yeah, you know, help actually advance things going forward. So I want to be in a better spot in 10 years' time than we are today. So I think we've got to do the right thing and educate and talk about differences with products. And if someone says another actually terminology, sativa versus indica. Many people think sativa is energizing, indica sedating. It's not the way at all. It's what the plant looks like. A tall plant with thin leaves is sativa. A short plant with broad leaves is indica. The effective sedational energy is about those terpenes, etc. you mentioned. So the reason that confusion, if you want to know, came into it is because way back in the day in the 1700s, actually, I don't know when boats were invented, but before boats were invented, there was no seed trade around the world. And a certain plant would only grow in a certain region of the world. And it would pick up things within that area, certain terpenes and things from that environment. And it would have a certain effect based on that. So if a plant always grew in Afghanistan, it may have a certain kind of profile and would have a certain effect. But as soon as you start breeding these all together, you get different cannabinoids and terpenes and different effects. But people kept that terminology of sativa indica and linking it to the effect of the plant. But really, it's not that at all. It's the appearance. But it's about educating patients as well that are caught up on those terms. But the doctors say, Matt, trust me, they just want to know it's indica and that'll help them sleep. And it's hard for me to accept that because I want to educate and say, no, that doesn't mean anything. It's about
You're
terpene.
wrong.
So it's a hard one, but placebo plays a role too. If you know,
It
people, if they get a
does.
sativa and think, hang on, no, this is going to keep me up, and then that happens because your mind is powerful. So
Absolutely.
yeah, it's but anyway,
Absolutely.
over years we'll be able to slowly get there. And I think if we can have other angles, you know, through pharmacies and not always trying to educate through the appointment, the medical appointment, we can try and chat about all these other things too. And again, we can't have the doctor just talking about sativa versus indica for half an hour, and then that's the whole consult. So it's
Exactly. I think the education piece is that sort of like, be fascinated about your cannabis medicine and learn more. And so, and then they spread that information, but it's, you need, passionate people and time and actually like willing participants to be able to actually come along and listen to that information. And it's hard in this world. Everyone's time poor. So it's really tricky to be like, well, how are we going to get this information in quick, sharp bursts to be able to get it to people with the attention span that we have and the quality information that they need. It's a challenge. It's a big challenge.
I'm
And let
finding that
alone,
building
government
the
and
videos I'm doing now just to try and just a little explanatory videos that they can just watch. And because I talk a lot, as you probably can tell, and then trying to get that on paper, it's ended up giving him a novel. And yeah, it's not
Yeah,
the
like even just this is incredibly insightful, and just hearing your passion and your incredible knowledge on the history, let alone the growing, and then the medicinal components, it just makes me so excited because I fell in love with this medicine too, and I love to shout it from the rooftops because I see how much it changes quality of life, exactly what you said, and how safe it is. And it's crazy that people aren't taking this seriously or can't even consider it. And they're like, oh, and the most common statement I hear when I mention it, I'm like, have you thought about cannabis? They're like, well, what, the one that makes you high? And I'm like, no, the one that, solves all your health problems and helps you really, quite a lot. They're like, oh, no, I've never even thought about that. Oh, really? And I'm like,
Yeah,
oh,
little
here we
one that's
go.
healthy, not high. And it's and that's the thing too. So people will think it's no, I'd rather not. And they might not be thinking of the way they felt when they've tried it in the past, but and again, they're just thinking of THC and just blanket statementing that whole thing. But again, you could have a CBD product, and/or if you do need a high THC product for a certain ailment, it's about titrating up. You're not going to just have a very high dose to start with. If myself, I have THC every single day. I've had it for the last, gosh, 15 years daily. If it interfered with my day, I would not be having it. You know, I wouldn't want something that actually gets in the way and makes my life harder. But when I used to have breaks, thinking it was bad for me, or if I go to Bali or something and have to have a break from it, when I get back, my first dose is impairing. I wouldn't want to have it daily if that's how I actually felt all the time. It's just that first one again, when you just build up to your dose and your body gets accustomed to it again. But if you start low enough, you won't have that feeling. I just start at my normal dose, but it's some people kind of think, oh no, that's I don't want to feel like that. But it was not that at all. It's if you had too much Oxycontin or whatever, I'm sure you feel not the greatest. I've never had any of those medicines before, but I'm sure people like they've felt far more intoxicated or impaired with their normal painkillers. And that's the thing, they go and have cannabis and realize, oh, is that all? Gosh, okay, this is nothing. But stigma's real. It's all the scare tactics. There's pictures of people doing weird things with bloody musical instruments is part of the stigma and the scare tactics back in the day. I'm not sure if you've seen that picture, but it's like if you have cannabis, you'll do
Need to
this. It's
now.
like, what on earth? One of the weirdest ones I heard was someone back in the day trying to tell me that, oh, no, cannabis is definitely bad. The reason it's bad for you is the smoke is so hot that it burns your brain. And it was like, but I'm not a doctor, but I don't think we breathe into our brain. I think we breathe into our lungs. And I just didn't like it. But that's the thing. Someone just says that and say, oh, no, have you been to rehabs? And like they just kind of assume that's what's going on. And then once I really started looking into deeper and I went to rehabs to try and learn some of these things, I realized it was all alcohol and gambling. It's not what we actually think about it. It's some, but we just a nice brush off statement. We just believe and go on with our day. But so I'm glad now we can start to come back with some proper facts. And it's not just someone saying, oh, no, it's not real. Weed is great. Like, no, we can talk about it properly. Cannabinoids, research, and the right terminology. And actually, there's a serious side to it. I am that blend of, I'm still a very casual person. I still wear shorts and things like that. I'm not a very corporate man in suits and whatnot. But I know that we need to treat this seriously. And if I'm in Parliament House or in a, after this, I've got to go train up a doctor, I'll put some pants on to make sure they view it the right way and don't
Love
discharge
it.
and things like that. But so we're getting there though. And the clinical trials are that part that no one can really deny or refuse. If no matter what we look like or anything, the data is there and they're going to really be excited there. And so it's the good bit is we can actually kind of do the work figuring out what works, what doesn't before the trial. None of the medicine can do that. You can't have anyone try it. Like you can't just crush up some random compounds you've found in the garden and prescribe it to people. And so we can do that with cannabis and then actually learn what's working, save a bit of time for the clinical trial process going forward. So yeah, it's a quite a unique space that that we find ourselves in. So I'm trying to utilize it as best we can.
So good. I just love it. And I am so in awe of someone like yourself, and you've just been in this industry and really just trying your hardest to get this big change, because I know how hard it is, and it is really hard from doing this day to do this day in, day out, and to keep pushing forward with some setbacks and, all the trials and the money that's involved. I didn't even speak about it. You said what was spent, but the money that goes into just one trial is really intensive. So there's just so much to each part of this particular business for greater change and greater benefit for other people.
And the biggest part, like, yes, we know it's safe and all those kind of things. So the trials aren't proving anything to me in that regard. But what we need trials for is product registration, which means any doctor can prescribe it like any other medicine. And then also, once it's registered, you can then apply for it to be on the PBS, which is the government subsidy where they cover the bulk of the cost. And so then all the issues of access with price points, etc., is all resolved as well. So there'll be people out there, even some cannabis politicians, that are kind of saying, we need this in the PBS. And I'm like, we can. People have got to put the effort in to do the trials, And so, there's some cannabis companies out there doing $500 million in revenue a year, $0 on trials. We've spent more on trials than we've ever made on selling the product. And so, but again, that's what's important. So, but we'll fight that fight and do it. But it's bigger than just purely about getting one product registered. It can open up subsidies, it can open
So
up,
many.
health insurance, all these different angles of people being able to get helped and get the access they need. I think people that can access it right now are the lucky ones where they're able to find their doctor and or they've got the finances or the right products, etc. But there's lots of people out there that
Can't.
they can't afford it or so I think that's where the bigger picture stuff. Like we've got programs to help people with subsidies, but you can't get that out to the 20 million people in Australia without advertising. So the
Yeah.
proper channel of PBS and government-led kind of things is the way to, bigger picture way to help everyone in the country. So yeah, that's a big angle of the trial space.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a lot to be excited for. I think that's really what it comes down to. And as you know, I'm here to support in any way that I can. I'll keep educating the back end and getting clients involved and excited about this sort of medicine, and just keep taking my notes of when I hear about all the successes, which is really incredible. But yeah, thank you so much, Matt, and thank you for your time today. And I definitely want to have another discussion. I think we could talk for hours, as you say. You love to talk, and I love to listen, and I love to teach and to support other people to learn. So it's just the best way to do it, and we can snip it up and put it out there in all different channels and get people really as excited as we are.
Yeah, lovely that. Thank you for your support. Really appreciate it. And definitely, I think chat number two needed. I haven't even touched on any of the points that I had jotted down, but I enough. Lots more to chat about for sure.
Absolutely. Part two, definitely, then. So I'll let you go put your pants on and get ready for your doctor
I have
visit.
shorts on, just to clarify. I've got long pants on.
Just teasing, just teasing.
Oh, lovely. But thank you again for your support. Yeah, really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Matt. All right, until next time. We'll see you soon.
We hope you enjoy this episode. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Revital Health, as well as our website, revitalhealth.com.au, for upcoming podcasts, workshops, and speaking events. Find out about specials happening in the clinic and all the show notes and links mentioned in the podcast. Please remember that this information discussed here is general information and it is not intended to diagnose or treat individuals. Please speak to your healthcare professional before embarking on any new treatments, lifestyle changes, medicines, or supplementation to assess your suitability. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you again soon.